Chapter 157. The Emigrants, one thing more I had to do before yielding myself to the shock of these emotions. It was to conceal what had occurred from those who were going away, and to dismiss them on their voyage in happy ignorance. In this, no time was to be lost. I took Mr. Micawber aside that same night, and confided to him the task of standing between Mr. Peggotty and intelligence of the late catastrophe. He zealously undertook to do so, and to intercept any newspaper through which it might, without such precautions, reach him. If it penetrates to him, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Micawber, striking himself on the breast, it shall first pass through this body. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Micawber, I must observe, in his adaptation of himself to a new state of society, had acquired a bold buccaneering air, not absolutely lawless, but defensive and prompt. One might have supposed him a child of the wilderness, long accustomed to live out of the confines of civilization, and about to return to his native wilds. He had provided himself, among other things, with a complete suit of oilskin, and a straw hat with a very low crown, pitched or caulked on the outside. In this rough clothing, with a common mariner's telescope under his arm, and a shrewd trick of casting up his eye at the sky as looking out for dirty weather, he was far more nautical, after his manner, than Mr. Peggotty. His whole family, if I may so express it, were cleared for action. I found Mrs. Micawber in the closest, and most uncompromising of bonnets, made fast under the chin, and in a shawl which tied her up as I had been tied up, when my aunt first received me, like a bundle, and was secured behind at the waist, in a strong knot. Miss Micawber I found made snug for stormy weather, in the same manner, with nothing superfluous about her. Master Micawber was hardly visible in a Guernsey shirt, and the shaggiest suit of slops I ever saw, and the children were done up, like preserved meats, in impervious cases. Both Mr. Micawber and his eldest son wore their sleeves loosely turned back at the wrists, as being ready to lend a hand in any direction, and to tumble up, or sing out, "Yeo heave yeo!" Apostrophe apostrophe on the shortest notice. Thus Traddles and I found them at nightfall, assembled on the wooden steps, at that time known as Hungerford Stairs, watching the departure of a boat with some of their property on board. I had told Traddles of the terrible event, and it had greatly shocked him, but there could be no doubt of the kindness of keeping it a secret, and he had come to help me in this last service. It was here that I took Mr. Micawber aside, and received his promise. The Micawber family were lodged in a little, dirty, tumble-down public house, which in those days was close to the stairs, and whose protruding wooden rooms overhung the river. The family, as emigrants, being objects of some interest in and about Hungerford, attracted so many beholders, that we were glad to take refuge in their room. It was one of the wooden chambers upstairs, with the tide flowing underneath. My aunt and Agnes were there, busily making some little extra comforts, in the way of dress, for the children. Peggotty was quietly assisting, with the old and sensible workbox, yard measure, and bit of wax candle before her, that had now outlived so much. It was not easy to answer her inquiries, still less to whisper Mr. Peggotty, when Mr. Micawber brought him in, that I had given the letter, and all was well. But I did both, and made them happy. If I showed any trace of what I felt, my own sorrows were sufficient to account for it. And when does the ship sail, Mr. Micawber? Apostrophe apostrophe asked my aunt. Mr. Micawber considered it necessary to prepare either my aunt or his wife, by degrees, and said, sooner than he had expected yesterday. The boat brought the word, I suppose? Apostrophe apostrophe said my aunt. It did, ma'am, apostrophe he returned. Well? Apostrophe apostrophe said my aunt. And she sails apostrophe, madam, apostrophe he replied. I am informed that we must positively be on board before 7 tomorrow morning. Apostrophe, heyday. Apostrophe apostrophe said my aunt, that's soon. Is it a seagoing fact, Mr. Peggotty? ...so, ma'am. She'll drop down the river with that fear tide. If Master Davy and my sister comes aboard at Gravesen, arter noon next day, they'll see the last on us. ...and that we shall do, said I, be sure. Until then, and until we are at sea, observed Mr. Micawber, with a glance of intelligence at me, Mr. Peggotty and myself will constantly keep a double lookout together, on our goods and chattels. Emma, my love, said Mr. Micawber, clearing his throat in his magnificent way, my friend Mr. Thomas Traddles is so obliging as to solicit, in my ear, that he should have the privilege of ordering the ingredients necessary to the composition of a moderate portion of that beverage which is peculiarly associated, in our minds, with the roast beef of Old England. I allude to, in short, punch. Under ordinary circumstances, I should scruple to entreat the indulgence of Miss Trotwood and Miss Wickfield, but I can only say for myself, said my aunt, that I will drink all happiness and success to you, Mr. Micawber, with the utmost pleasure. And I too. Said Agnes, with a smile. Mr. Micawber immediately descended to the bar, where he appeared to be quite at home, and in due time returned with a steaming jug. I could not but observe that he had been peeling the lemons with his own clasp knife, which, as became the knife of a practical settler, was about a foot long, and which he wiped, not wholly without ostentation, on the sleeve of his coat. Mrs. Micawber and the two elder members of the family I now found to be provided with similar formidable instruments, while every child had its own wooden spoon attached to its body by a strong line. In a similar anticipation of life afloat, and in the bush, Mr. Micawber, instead of helping Mrs. Micawber and his eldest son and daughter to punch, in wine glasses, which he might easily have done, for there was a shelf full in the room, served it out to them in a series of villainous little tin pots, and I never saw him enjoy anything so much as drinking out of his own particular pint pot, and putting it in his pocket at the close of the evening. The luxuries of the old country, said Mr. Micawber, with an intense satisfaction in their renouncement, we abandon. The denizens of the forest cannot, of course, expect to participate in the refinements of the land of the free. Here, a boy came in, to say that Mr. Micawber was wanted downstairs. I have a presentiment, said Mrs. Micawber, setting down her tin pot, that it is a member of my family. If so, my dear, observed Mr. Micawber, with his usual suddenness of warmth on that subject, as the member of your family, whoever he, she, or it may be, has kept us waiting for a considerable period, perhaps the member may now wait my convenience. Micawber, said his wife, in a low tone, at such a time as this, it is not meet, said Mr. Micawber, rising, that every nice offense should bear its comment. Emma, I stand reproved. The loss, Micawber, observed his wife, has been my family's, not yours. If my family are at length sensible of the deprivation to which their own conduct has, in the past, exposed them, and now desire to extend the hand of fellowship, let it not be repulsed. My dear, he returned, so be it. If not for their sakes, for mine, Micawber, said his wife. Emma, he returned. That view of the question is, at such a moment, irresistible. I cannot, even now, distinctly pledge myself to fall upon your family's neck, but the member of your family, who is now in attendance, shall have no genial warmth frozen by me. Mr. Micawber withdrew, and was absent some little time, in the course of which Mrs. Micawber was not wholly free from an apprehension that words might have arisen between him and the member. At length the same boy reappeared, and presented me with a note written in pencil, and headed, in a legal manner, Heap v. Micawber. From this document, I learned that Mr. Micawber, being again arrested, was in a final paroxysm of despair, and that he begged me to send him his knife and pint pot, by bearer, as they might prove serviceable during the brief remainder of his existence, in jail. He also requested, as a last act of friendship, that I would see his family to the parish workhouse, and forget that such a being ever lived. Of course I answered this note, by going down with the boy to pay the money, where I found Mr. Micawber sitting in a corner, looking darkly at the sheriff's officer who had effected the capture. On his release, he embraced me with the utmost fervor, and made an entry of the transaction in his pocketbook, being very particular, I recollect, about a halfpenny I inadvertently omitted from my statement of the total. This momentous pocketbook was a timely reminder to him of another transaction. On our return to the room upstairs, where he accounted for his absence by saying that it had been occasioned by circumstances over which he had no control, he took out of it a large sheet of paper, folded small, and quite covered with long sums, carefully worked. From the glimpse I had of them, I should say that I never saw such sums out of a school ciphering book. These, it seemed, were calculations of compound interest on what he called the principal amount of 41, 10, 11 and a half, for various periods. After a careful consideration of these, and an elaborate estimate of his resources, he had come to the conclusion to select that sum which represented the amount with compound interest to 2 years, 15 calendar months, and 14 days, from that date. For this he had drawn a note of hand with great neatness, which he handed over to Traddles on the spot, a discharge of his debt in full, as between man and man, with many acknowledgments. I have still a presentiment, apostrophe said Mrs. Micawber, pensively shaking her head, that my family will appear on board, before we finally depart. Apostrophe, Mr. Micawber evidently had his presentiment on the subject too, but he put it in his tin pot and swallowed it. If you have any opportunity of sending letters home, on your passage, Mrs. Micawber, apostrophe said my aunt, you must let us hear from you, you know. Apostrophe, my dear Miss Trotwood, apostrophe she replied, I shall only be too happy to think that anyone expects to hear from us. I shall not fail to correspond. Mr. Copperfield, I trust, as an old and familiar friend, will not object to receive occasional intelligence, himself, from one who knew him, when the twins were yet unconscious. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I said, that I should hope to hear, whenever she had an opportunity of writing. Please heaven, there will be many such opportunities, apostrophe said Mr. Micawber. The ocean, in these times, is a perfect fleet of ships, and we can hardly fail to encounter many, in running over. It is merely crossing, apostrophe said Mr. Micawber, trifling with his eyeglass, merely crossing. The distance is quite imaginary. Apostrophe, I think now, how odd it was, but how wonderfully like Mr. Micawber, that, when he went from London to Canterbury, he should have talked, as if he were going to the farthest limits of the earth, and, when he went from England to Australia, as if he were going for a little trip across the channel. On the voyage, I shall endeavor, apostrophe said Mr. Micawber, occasionally to spin them a yarn. And the melody of my son Wilkins will, I trust, be acceptable at the galley fire. When Mrs. Micawber has her sea legs on an expression in which I hope there is no conventional impropriety she will give them, I dare say, little Taflin. Porpoises and dolphins, I believe, will be frequently observed athwart our bows, and, either on the starboard or the larboard quarter, objects of interest will be continually descried. In short, apostrophe said Mr. Micawber, with the old genteel air, the probability is, all will be found so exciting, alow and aloft, that when the lookout, stationed in the maintop, cries Lando, we shall be very considerably astonished. Apostrophe apostrophe, with, that he flourished off the contents of his little tin pot, as if he had made the voyage, and had passed a first-class examination before the highest naval authorities. Apostrophe what I chiefly hope, my dear Mr. Copperfield, apostrophe said Mrs. Micawber, is, that in some branches of our family we may live again in the old country. Do not frown, Micawber. I do not now refer to my own family, but to our children's children. However vigorous the sapling, apostrophe said Mrs. Micawber, shaking her head, I cannot forget the parent tree, and when our race attains to eminence and fortune, I own I should wish that fortune to flow into the coffers of Britannia. Apostrophe, my dear, apostrophe said Mr. Micawber, Britannia must take her chance. I am bound to say that she has never done much for me, and that I have no particular wish upon the subject. Apostrophe, Micawber, apostrophe returned Mrs. Micawber, there, you are wrong. You are going out, Micawber, to this distant clime, to strengthen, not to weaken, the connection between yourself and Albion. Apostrophe, the connection in question, my love, apostrophe rejoined Mr. Micawber, has not laid me, I repeat, under that load of personal obligation, that I am at all sensitive, as to the formation of another connection. Apostrophe, Micawber, apostrophe returned Mrs. Micawber. There, I again say, you are wrong. You do not know your power, Micawber. It is that which will strengthen, even in this step you are about to take, the connection between yourself and Albion. Apostrophe, Mr. Micawber sat in his elbow chair, with his eyebrows raised, half receiving and half repudiating Mrs. Micawber's views as they were stated, but very sensible of their foresight. My dear Mr. Copperfield, apostrophe said Mrs. Micawber, I wish Mr. Micawber to feel his position. It appears to me highly important that Mr. Micawber should, from the hour of his embarkation, feel his position. Your old knowledge of me, my dear Mr. Copperfield, will have told you that I have not the sanguine disposition of Mr. Micawber. My disposition is, if I may say so, eminently practical. I know that this is a long voyage. I know that it will involve many privations and inconveniences. I cannot shut my eyes to those facts. But I also know what Mr. Micawber is. I know the latent power of Mr. Micawber. And therefore I consider it vitally important that Mr. Micawber should feel his position. Apostrophe, my love, apostrophe he observed. Perhaps you will allow me to remark that it is barely possible that I do feel my position at the present moment. Apostrophe, I think not, Micawber, apostrophe she rejoined. Not fully. My dear Mr. Copperfield, Mr. Micawber's is not a common case. Mr. Micawber's. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.